It's VOA 1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, Mario Ritter Jr. tells us about an unexpected drop in migrant crossings at the U.S.-Mexico border. John Russell presents this week's Health and Lifestyle Report. We close with the next part of our U.S. history series. But first, Turkey's presidential election will be decided in a runoff, election officials said Monday. The election was held on Sunday. Current President Recep Tayyip Erdogan pulled ahead of his main challenger, but fell short of a total victory. The second round vote will be held on May 28th. It will decide whether the country remains under Erdogan's control or whether it takes a more democratic path promised by Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, the president's main challenger. Turks woke on Monday to learn that support for Erdogan fell just below the 50% mark in Sunday's election. Still, pro-government media supported the outcome. The Yeni Safak newspaper declared, "The people won." That refers to Erdogan's People's Alliance, which appeared to have won a majority in parliament. Such a result would possibly give Erdogan an upper hand in the presidential runoff. "The winner has undoubtedly been our country," Erdogan said in a speech to his supporters at the headquarters of his ruling AK party in the capital, Ankara. Erdogan has been in power for 20 years. Public opinion studies had suggested that his time in power could be coming to an end. Turks have not been happy with their country's cost-of-living crisis. The government was also criticized for its response to February's deadly earthquake in southern Turkey. Critics said the government was too slow to provide help after the 7.8 magnitude quake, which killed more than 50,000 people. Kılıçdaroğlu is the head of a six-party alliance. He promised to win in the runoff and accused Erdogan's party of interfering with the vote counting and reporting of results. He called on his supporters to be patient. An extension of Erdogan's rule would upset civil rights activists. They are campaigning for reforms to undo the damage they say Erdogan has done to Turkey's democracy. Thousands of political prisoners and activists could be released if the opposition wins. The election has been closely watched in Europe, the United States, and Russia. Erdogan has increased Turkey's regional power, strengthened the country's ties to Russia, and worsened relations with the United States. Even as it became clear a runoff was likely, Erdogan said Sunday's vote was a victory both for himself and the country. That the election results have not been finalized doesn't change the fact that the nation has chosen us, he said. Kılıçdaroğlu and his party have lost all previous presidential and parliamentary elections since he took leadership in 2010. But this time, the party received more votes than in the past. Kılıçdaroğlu campaigned on a pro-democracy platform. He also promised to repair an economy hurt by high inflation and a weakened currency. In an effort to win voters affected by inflation, Erdogan increased wages and pensions and gave government money for electricity and gas bills. As the results came in, it appeared that Erdogan performed better than expected.
The administration of U.S. President Joe Biden says the number of migrants crossing the southern U.S. border with Mexico has unexpectedly fallen. U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas said border agents reported a 50% reduction in the number of migrants crossing the border since Thursday. On that day, public health emergency measures in the U.S. came to an end. Mayorkas spoke on national television Sunday. He told CNN, "The numbers we have experienced in the past 2 days are markedly down over what they were prior to the end of Title 42. Title 42 is the part of U.S. law that deals with public health. Measures in that law permit public health officials to limit or stop entry into the United States by people who are not citizens if a disease is spreading in the country. Mayorkas credited criminal punishments for illegal migrants for the decrease in illegal entry. He said there were 6,300 encounters at the border on Friday and 4,200 on Saturday. But he warned that the new system has just started. The earlier rules were put in place under former President Donald Trump when the spread of COVID-19 created a public health emergency. Trump also put in place limits on migrants seeking asylum in the U.S. President Joe Biden told reporters in Rehoboth, Delaware, that he believed the border situation was much better than critics expected. The Biden administration is requiring migrants to plan a visit with immigration offices through an app. They can also seek protection in one of the countries they are passing through on their way to the U.S. border. Those who do not follow the process and are caught will not be permitted to try again for 5 years. Mayorkas said, "There is a lawful, safe, and orderly way to arrive in the United States. That is through the pathways that President Biden has expanded in an unprecedented way." I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
Scientists recently released a new accounting of the human genome. The research effort included information from people from around the world and could help ongoing efforts to identify genetic causes of diseases. A genome is an organism's genetic map and contains the information needed for development and growth. Each person's genome is individual, differing only from all others by about 0.4% on average. Scientists have made big advances in understanding the human genome in the past 20 years. In 2003, researchers announced the first genome sequence that accounted for over 90% of the complete human genome. It included information from about 20 people, but 70% of the blood donated for the research came from one individual of mixed European and African ancestry. The first complete human genome, based on one European person, was published last year. The Human Pangenome Project builds upon this body of work. A pangenome is a collection of diverse genomes. Scientists describe it as a rainbow of genomes, compared with one line representing the older, single reference genome. The collection is designed to represent the genetic diversity of the human species. By comparing the genomes, we can then build a map of not just one individual, but a whole population of variation, said Benedict Patton of the University of California, Santa Cruz. Patton was the senior writer of the main research paper that reported the findings in Nature. The pangenome contains material from 24 people of African ancestry, 16 from the Americas and the Caribbean, 6 from Asia, and 1 from Europe. The group leading the research is part of the Human Genome Reference Program, which is financed by an arm of the U.S. National Institutes of Health. Our species, Homo sapiens, developed in Africa roughly 300,000 years ago and later spread worldwide. Human ancestry is incredibly complex, and we're all related to each other through our common history, said Ira Hall, director of the Yale Center for Genomic Health and one of the research leaders. Hall added, "And so by sampling broadly across the genetic tree of humanity, it benefits everybody." The new genome research could deepen understanding about how genetic variation is linked to health and disease. It could also improve genetic testing and guide drug discovery. Candace Hirsch of the University of Minnesota was not involved in the research, but has closely followed the effort. She said she expects many discoveries to flow from it. "Until now, we really have only been able to scratch the surface of understanding the genetics that underlies disease," she added. It may take a while for patients to see benefits from the research. But scientists said new findings should help make genetic testing more exact and possibly lead to drug discoveries. The research team is in the process of adding to the collection of reference genomes. The group aims to have sequences from 350 people by the middle of next year. Scientists are also hoping to work more with international partners, including those centered on indigenous populations. "We're in it for the long game," Patton said. I'm John Russell.
You just heard John Russell present this week's Health and Lifestyle Report. John joins me now to talk a little bit more about the story. Welcome, John.
Hi, Ashley.
Thanks for having me on the show.
You mention in the report that some scientists compare the pan genome to a rainbow of genomes. Can you explain that a little more?
Sure. We use the term rainbow in a couple different ways. The most common way is as a noun. The noun rainbow is a curved line of different colors that sometimes appears in the sky. So, when scientists talk about a rainbow of genomes, they create an image of a range of colors connected in the sky. Just as the colors of a rainbow are different, so too are the genomes of each person.
And rainbow can have another meaning too, right?
Yes. Sometimes we use it as an adjective. For example, in a story about politics, you might hear about a rainbow coalition. It means groups of different cultures, races, or religions working together.
Well, thanks for telling us a little more about the word rainbow, John. And thanks for being here today.
You're welcome. See you next time.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. We continue the story of America's 33rd president, Harry Truman. Truman was sometimes called an accidental president. He only became president because he was vice president when Franklin Roosevelt died in 1945. In the election of 1948, Truman ran for a full term. As we told you last week, many experts predicted he would lose. But voters chose him over the Republican Party candidate, Thomas E. Dewey, the governor of New York. Americans also elected a Congress with a majority from Truman's Democratic Party. The president might have expected a Congress led by his own party to support his policies, but that did not always happen. Time after time, Democrats from southern states joined in voting with conservative Republicans. Together, these lawmakers defeated some of Truman's most important proposals. One of the defeated bills was a proposal for health care insurance for every American. One of the major issues during Truman's second term was fear of communism. After World War II, Americans watched as one Eastern European nation after another became an ally of the Soviet Union. Soviet leader Joseph Stalin wanted to see communism spread around the world. And Americans watched as China became communist in 1949, as forces led by Mao Zedong defeated the Chinese nationalists after a civil war that had lasted more than 10 years. During this tense period, there were charges that communists held important jobs in the United States government. These fears, real or imagined, became known as the Red Scare.
Even if there were only one communist in the State Department, that would still be one communist too many.
A Republican senator from Wisconsin, Joseph McCarthy, led the search for communists in America. In speeches and congressional hearings, he accused hundreds of people of being communists or communist supporters. His targets included the State Department, the Army, and the entertainment industry. Senator McCarthy often had little evidence to support his accusations. Many of his charges would not have been accepted in a court of law. But the rules governing congressional hearings were different, so he was able to make his accusations freely. Many people lost their jobs after they were denounced as communists. Some had to use false names to get work. A few went to jail briefly for refusing to cooperate with McCarthy. The senator continued his anti-communist investigations for several years. By the early 1950s, however, more people began to question his methods. Critics said he violated democratic traditions. In 1954, the Senate finally voted to condemn his actions. McCarthy died 3 years later. There were problems caused by the fear of communists at home. But President Truman also had to deal with the threat of communism in other countries. He agreed to send American aid to Greece and Turkey. He also supported continuing the Marshall Plan. That was the huge economic aid program that helped rebuild Western Europe after World War II. Many historians say the Marshall Plan prevented Western Europe from becoming communist. The defense of Western Europe against Soviet communism led Truman to support the creation of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. NATO began in 1949 with the United States, Britain, Canada, France, and 8 other nations. The treaty that created NATO stated that a military attack on any member would be considered an attack on all of them. Truman named General Dwight Eisenhower to command the new organization. General Eisenhower had been supreme commander of Allied forces in Europe in World War II. In his swearing-in speech in 1949, Truman urged the United States to lend money to other countries to aid their development. He also wanted to share American science and technology. In 1951, the president asked Congress to establish a new foreign aid program. The aid would go to countries threatened by communist forces in Europe, the Middle East, North Africa, East Asia, South Asia, and Latin America. Truman believed the United States would be stronger if its allies were stronger. President Truman believed that many of the world's problems could be settled by means other than military force. But he supported and used military power throughout his presidency. On June 25, 1950, forces from North Korea invaded South Korea. 2 days later, the United Nations Security Council approved a resolution urging UN members to help South Korea resist the invasion. At first, President Truman agreed to send American planes and ships. Later, he agreed to send American ground forces. The president knew his decision could start World War III if the Soviet Union entered the war on the side of communist North Korea. Yet he felt the United States had to act. Later, he said it was the most difficult decision he made as president. Truman named Army General Douglas MacArthur to command all United Nations forces in South Korea. Most of the fighting in the Korean War took place along the geographic line known as the 38th parallel. This line formed the border between North and South Korea. Many victories on the battlefield were only temporary. One side would capture a hill, then the other side would recapture it. In September of 1950, MacArthur led the UN land and sea attack at Incheon, pushing the North Koreans back across the border. There was hope that the war could end by Christmas, December 25th. In late November, however, troops from China joined the North Koreans. Thousands of Chinese soldiers helped push the UN troops south. General MacArthur wanted to attack Chinese bases in Manchuria. President Truman said no. He did not want the fighting to spread beyond the Korean Peninsula. Again, he feared that such a decision could start another world war. MacArthur strongly believed he could end the war quickly by extending it to the Chinese mainland. He publicly denounced Truman's policy, saying, "There is no substitute for victory." Truman felt that the general left him no choice. In April of 1951, he dismissed MacArthur.
"It was with the deepest personal regret that I found myself compelled to take this action. General MacArthur is one of our greatest military commanders, but the cause of world peace is much more important than any individual."
In the United States, military leaders are expected to obey their commander-in-chief, the president. While some Americans approved of the general's dismissal, many others supported MacArthur. Millions greeted him when he returned to the United States. There were huge parades in his honor in San Francisco and New York. In fact, few leaders in the 20th century could boast the support MacArthur had. Almost 7 million people attended the ticker tape parade given to him by New York City. And that almost doubled the size of the one given to another returning World War II hero, General Dwight Eisenhower. MacArthur gave his farewell speech to a joint session of Congress on April 19, 1951.
"I am closing my 52 years of military service. When I joined the Army, even before the turn of the century, it was the fulfillment of all my boyish hopes and dreams. The world has turned over many times since I took the oath on the plain at West Point, and the hopes and dreams have long since vanished. But I still remember the refrain of one of the most popular barrack ballads of that day, which proclaimed most proudly that old soldiers never die. They just fade away. And like the old soldier of that ballad, I now close my military career and just fade away. An old soldier who tried to do his duty as God gave him the light to see that duty. Goodbye."
On the Korean Peninsula, the war continued. Ceasefire talks began in July of 1951, but the conflict would last for another 2 years until a truce was declared. The Korean War Armistice Agreement was signed on July 27, 1953.
That's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.